So, what are you telling me? That you think Paul was happy with the Galatians? No. Paul was very upset with the Galatians. And as soon as he heard that the Galatians were starting to waver and falter from their calling and grace, he called his scribe, Tertius, over to him, and he said, "Tertius, take a memo." Tertius took a memo. Today we call that memo the letter to the Galatians. I'm going to start in chapter 3 because I love chapter 3, verse 1 out of the J.B. Phillips paraphrase. I don't have it with me right now. I have the concordant version, but I have the J.B. Phillips paraphrase memorized for Galatians chapter 3, verse 1. And it says this: "Dear idiots of Galatia," I absolutely love that. The concordant has, "O foolish Galatians." But I definitely like the Phillips paraphrase there. "Dear idiots of Galatia, who bewitches you, before whose eyes Jesus Christ was graphically crucified?" There's a question. Who bewitches you? Because to bring law into the life of someone who has received grace is a magic trick. It's like somebody sawing a woman in half or doing some kind of mind reading trick. It's black magic. How do you get somebody who has learned from the apostle of grace, their salvation is completely outside of themselves, and then how are you tricked into giving away your freedom to smooth talkers? Well, maybe I just answered my own question. The Galatians were smooth talkers. I mean, no, the people coming at the Galatians, which is the circumcisionists. You see, there were many in Jerusalem who believed in Jesus Christ. Here's what many people don't realize. There were many who believed in Jesus Christ, yet they were still zealous for the law. And I'm going to put a verse down here. I'm going to write a verse. That's why you should be watching this on the porch cam. I'm going to put a verse here that tells you that the people who were vexing Paul were in the circle of the faith. They called themselves Christians, and indeed they were Christians. Christian was the term for the people in Jerusalem. You might call them completed Jews. They were Jews who believed in Jesus Christ, yet they were still zealous for the law. And these are the people that vexed Paul, because these were the people with a potential to mix the evangel. And this is dangerous territory when you have people naming Christ. And Paul asks this very pertinent question here, right after he calls them idiots. He says, "This only I want to learn from you." It's like, tell me one thing, you Galatians. Did you get the Spirit by works of law, or by the hearing of faith? Did you get the Spirit by works of law? How in the world can you get the Spirit of God by works of law? The law were things that you did. If I told you, get the Spirit, how do you get it? It's impossible to get the Spirit by works of law. So this is a rhetorical question of Paul's, because he knows what the answer is. And I'll tell you this right now. I have a feeling that after Paul wrote this letter, the Galatians were ashamed of themselves. Though we don't have a follow-up report, but I believe that the follow-up report would show that the Galatians just slapped themselves on the forehead and said, "Wow, we had that rebuke coming." Because obviously no one gets the Spirit by works of law. You get the Spirit by an active force of God banging down the walls of your inherent stubbornness, Romans chapter 3, and injecting your life with faith. So this is a rhetorical question. Did you get the Spirit by works of law or by the hearing of faith? Okay, you know, that makes me want to go to Romans chapter 10. This is how the Galatians came to believe, and this is how you and I come to believe as well. Everyone who ever, hang on a second. Listen to this. This is Romans 10, verse 13. Everyone who ever should be invoking the name of the Lord shall be being saved. So yes, you invoke the name of the Lord. You find yourself calling on the Lord. How then should they be invoking one in whom they do not believe? So the invocation, that is claiming the name of Christ legitimately, is the last domino of a series of events that begins with God injecting His Spirit into your life. Let's see the other dominoes here. How should they be invoking one in whom they do not believe? Yet how should they be believing one of whom they do not hear? So, this doesn't mean, it's tempting to think that because we're seeing a series of events, a series of fortunate, wonderful events, because we're seeing a series of things like hearing and heralding and invoking, it would tempt you, and it apparently tempted the Galatians, who were victims of some kind of smooth-talking witchcraft. It apparently convinced them to think that any sort of physical activity that we do is necessarily void of spirit. But this is how God has chosen the Spirit to manifest itself. It doesn't mean that He doesn't invade your world with spirit, but it's an invisible operation that is manifested in physical things. This is what I mean by physical things. How should they be believing one whom they do not hear? Yet how should they be hearing apart from one heralding? This is the importance of heralding the gospel. It's not my fault that God chose this method. Paul was the first and the last person that received the evangel of the grace of God by direct intervention. Went directly into his little Pharisee skull from God. It was a supernatural event. But guess what? It continues to be supernatural. It doesn't stop being supernatural. The difference is, oh God, why do I smoke these things? The difference is that now that supernaturalness is manifested through practical things. Because after that, Paul had to start telling people. The first and only time that it came, that the evangel came directly from God without invoking, without heralding, but not without believing, was when Paul was called on the road to Damascus. After that, it's a slow, laborious, humiliating, difficult process of human beings giving it to each other. This is why heralding is vitally important. Now this, and now this. Yet how should they be heralding if ever they should not be commissioned? Who's they? The people heralding. How should they be heralding if they're not commissioned? Commissioned by who? Another rhetorical question, this one from me. Commissioned by God. And then Paul says, this is verse 15, according as it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those bringing an evangel of good. This, our evangel, this evangel that I'm heralding to you now is an evangel of good. It's not an evangel of evil. The Christian evangel is an evangel of evil. Thus, it's a misnomer. Evangel means good news. The challenge to you to believe or burn, turn or burn, believe in God or die a horrible death, and no, live forever in an eternity of torment, that is not good news. So it requires a commission, and that commission does not come from an institution, does not come from a diploma, it does not come by human means, it is given by God. Paul was commissioned as a teacher, as a herald, and he told his friend Timothy to pass this message on to other faithful men who would be competent to teach it to others. So Paul says, how beautiful are the feet of those bringing an evangel of good. The feet, the most humble part of the human body are the feet. And it is the feet God uses to take the little evangelist, the little herald, with his little feet to go to people and to herald the truth. And then it's up to God who believes it and who doesn't. Let's go on here. How should they be heralding? How should they be hearing apart from one heralding? How should they be heralding if ever they should not be commissioned, according as it is written, beautiful feet bring an evangel of good, but not all obey the evangel. For Isaiah is saying, Lord, who believes our tidings? It's very rare today that somebody would believe our tidings, because again, we go against the grain. We do not have a popular message of a cooperative salvation. We have a message of God invading one's life with faith. And so that's our problem, if you will. That's our problem. Consequently, Paul says in verse 17 of Romans 10, faith is out of tidings, yet the tidings through a declaration of Christ. That's how it started. A declaration of Christ is how this whole thing started with Paul. The declaration of Christ came to Paul, and again, he then passed it on, and it becomes a chain reaction. It becomes a chain of people who pass it on. All right, let's go back to Galatians now. Back to Galatians chapter 3. This is how they heard it. Paul traveled to Galatia. His little evangelist feet took him on a ship, took the ship onto the sea, took the plank, walked down the plank onto the land. This is very slow, very laborious. Again, I say very humiliating. I think it's humiliating because it's not very slick. And yet, through all these steps, the Spirit of God is still the thing making all of this happen. You can't look at the practical transference of information and think that the Spirit of God is absent from the proceedings. It's not. Did you get the Spirit by works of law or by the hearing of faith? And the answer was they got it from the hearing of faith. And then Paul says, so foolish are you, undertaking in spirit, are you now being completed in flesh? That's the thing. Any belief in this evangel is undertaken in spirit. And again, I must emphasize this, it's not inconsistent to say that this thing comes by spirit and yet the nuts and bolts of it are by human beings traveling on their little feet, passing it on to other people. And it's a discouraging enterprise. I remind you of Paul in Athens on Mars Hill when he spoke this truth to a large group of people. And, you know, I think it'd be a good idea to go there to finish this video off. I don't know what I'm going to call this, but it has to do with the process of believing, and it has to do with the humiliating, difficult methods God has chosen. And I must emphasize that the whole thing is by spirit. So Paul, as you know, went to Athens and you went to Mars Hill. Mars Hill in that time was the equivalent of a talk show where the philosophers there just wanted to hear something new, and people would line up, speakers would line up to give their get their 15 minutes of fame on Mars Hill. And one day Paul was among them, and it was his turn to come up and speak. And he spoke, as you know, and as I've said, you may have heard me say this. If not, I'm going to say it again. It would be so easy if those of us who herald, and all of you who have tried to give this message to family members or friends, you are also a herald. It'd be so nice if, when you're talking to people, a little cursor would come by God, and it would point to the people. Say you're speaking to a group of 15 people, as I sometimes do, 15, 20, 30 people, or for Paul on Mars Hill. It would be really nice for Paul if a little arrow would come pointing to the people who were designated beforehand to believe in this evangel. That way, he could go directly to those people. If they were marked somehow, like this one, I have designated this one beforehand. But you see, we don't know who God has designated beforehand. So we have to broadcast it. Broadcasting is it's an agricultural term. It's a farming term. The farmer would take a handful of grain, he would broadcast it, he would just throw it out there. And our Lord gave a parable about this. A man likened unto is the kingdom of heaven as a man throwing seed, broadcasting seed. And he just throws it out there to see where it's going to stick. It's like throwing something up against the wall, see if it sticks. Jesus said some of the seed falls on rocks, some of the seed falls on good soil. Some of the seed gets blown away. You never know what's going to happen with that seed. But Paul doesn't have the advantage of knowing, and neither do we. And so we herald, we broadcast it and see where it sticks. And Paul's teaching in Athens, and he's quoting some of their poets. And they're listening to him. They're very patient until he starts talking about the resurrection of the dead. This is Paul. This is how he finishes up his little routine in Athens. Indeed, then, considering the times of ignorance, God is now charging humanity that all everywhere are to repent, for as much as he assigns a day in which he is about to be judging the inhabited earth in righteousness by the man whom he specifies, tendering faith to all, raising him from among the dead. Oh, wow. As soon as he said raising them from among the dead, they scoffed, they booed. Now, on hearing of the resurrection of the dead, this is verse 32 of Acts 17. These indeed jeered. They booed. Yet those say, we will hear you concerning this again also. They put him off and said, maybe stop by next week and elaborate upon this nonsense. Thus Paul came out of the midst. Paul did his job. He broadcast. Yet listen to this, verse 34. This is epicness. Yet some men being joined to him believe. And Paul, or Luke, who was writing Acts, gives the names of the people who were in attendance in Athens, who heard the message and believed, among whom were Dionysius the Areopagite. This was a native of Athens. Also, and a woman named Damaris, and others with them. Probably maybe two or three, I don't know. But he names these two people, Damaris and Dionysius. So rare was it that Paul threw something against the wall and it stuck. It stuck to maybe five people. And who knows how many people were in attendance in Athens? We don't know. On Mars Hill, could have been 100 people. Paul doesn't know, again, who's going to believe, who's designated beforehand. Because remember, who God designates beforehand, these he calls. So he designates people beforehand to hear and heed this evangel. And then sometime during the life of these people who have been designated beforehand, they're called. And whom he calls, these he justifies. And whom he justifies, these he glorifies also. I'm going to put those verse references down here for you as well on the porch cam. So you notice when this happens. It's after Paul has given his speech, because these people, among whom are Dionysius. I pronounced this dude's name wrong. I said it was Dionysius, but I'm looking at it now and it's Dionysius, which is actually better. I like that name, Dionysius. If I ever had another son, not that that's going to happen, I would name him Dionysius. And if I had a daughter, she would be Damaris. They believe, but they came to Paul later, and Luke must have been with Paul. Luke saw this whole thing going down. Luke was in the audience. And so Luke follows Paul, and a couple people came up, tugged on his toga, and said, "Psst, what you were saying up there about the resurrection? It sounds good to us." Because these people had an antenna for the truth. They were designated beforehand, and they heard it. Because Paul was a herald. He was commissioned by Jesus Christ, and he spoke the word. Because how could they believe unless they hear? How can they hear unless there's a herald? And how can there be a herald unless that herald is commissioned by none other than Jesus Christ? That's the series of events. Those are the divine dominoes that are falling here in Acts 17, and they've been falling that way ever since. Anybody who believes today doesn't believe any differently. And happy are the feet of those bringing an evangel of good.